We couldn't afford the things that our other friends had. We ended up stealing, and our friends who were wealthy started stealing to become like us, and everybody was trying to be something they weren't. And two of my friends decided they wanted to become gangsters. I mean, that was just their life. And I always tried to get away from it, and then ended up getting involved with dating somebody who was involved with relatives in the mob, and found myself in that life with people. And, you know, there was a friend of mine at the time who disappeared. And there were just a lot of, interesting happenings, a lot of things happening at that time. And I think the book, I mean, every story's already been told, you know, it's just your perception on how things happen. And, you know, the stories are really, it's not just a gangster book. I mean, it's a love story, underneath it. So, I mean, it has a lot of layers. And I think people are really going to love it. I mean, there's not a boring page in the book.
And it's now 36th on Amazon, and it's taken over a whole bunch of other very famous mob stories. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it goes up and down as people buy, obviously. It changes day to day. But it passed Casino, which was just really cool to see. Casino and Goodfellas, you know, right next to our book. It was pretty amazing. I mean, it's really cool to see that people are responding to it. The reviews right now are excellent, and so far it's just been a great experience.
And you mentioned earlier that your girlfriend, who became your wife at the time, helped you. What process did she play in this?
Well, I mean, she was an integral part, because, you know, the story wouldn't have come to life, honestly, if it wasn't for her. When I was in there and writing, I would send the pages out to her, 9 pages at a time. And I mean, we probably wrote, 700 pages that came down to about 400 in the book. And I'd send 9 pages out to her at a time. She would try, I mean, she would put it into the computer. And then when I got out and was with her, she, you know, she edited, she wrote a portion of the book. I mean, she had some great ideas. She's a very smart girl with a lot of creativity. We just really worked well together collaborating on this thing. It was a really good experience.
Now, you also have another book coming out, The Sergeant's Wife. And it's a police book, and obviously on this show we have a lot of respect for anyone who wears a uniform. I'm personally in the military reserve, as fans of this show will know. So what's this new book you're working on about?
Well, a friend of mine is a police sergeant, and he just had a really, really interesting story. His wife committed suicide last year. And, you know, the title underneath the book, The Sergeant's Wife, is he's a different kind of hero. And, you know, the guy just went through a lot. His wife was an alcoholic, and she was having affairs on him. And, you know, he was dealing with being a police officer. A lot of people see the police and think they're impenetrable, you know, and they don't deal with these kinds of things. And his wife had disappeared for a period of time, and, you know, he had to work through everything. And then when his wife died, he had to just remain strong. And, you know, it reminds me a little bit of a movie called When a Man Loves a Woman, which was with Meg Ryan back in the 90s, I believe. And, you know, people dealing with things like that, I mean, there's just so much human drama in it. And to watch what he's gone through and come through, I just think people are going to be really touched by the book. It's really an emotional roller coaster, which sounds cliche, but, you know, the more I heard about his story, the more I decided that it had to be told. And, you know, that's the next thing that we're working on. It's a fascinating story. I think people are going to love it.
Now, when people think of generally, you know, yourself, you're a former pro boxer. Obviously, you mentioned you were incarcerated for a little while. How did you go from that life to becoming an author?
Well, I've always been writing, you know. I worked on the TV show Melrose Place back in the 90s, wrote some screenplays. I've written my entire life. It just so happens that, you know, a good friend of mine, who's the executive producer of Ballers on HBO, Rob Weiss, he told me, he said, you know, everyone's writing screenplays in L.A., maybe you should write a novel. And it was a really interesting experience, because I had never written a book. And, I mean, it's such an open-ended format, you know. There's the learning curve in writing a book was really difficult. And I read hundreds of books to really kind of see how the character development worked and how the story had to be told. And then I fell in love with it. I mean, I really just want to write, you know, novels full time. That's really what I'm doing right now. And it's just an amazing experience. I mean, you really get to live in the story. And it's amazing to watch how it grows and takes different turns. And, you know, and really the exciting thing for me is to really see how people react to the words you put on paper and how you take them through the story. It's just something I'm very passionate about.
So are there any books that really influenced you writing #StrongIsland, or was it just your personal experience that really drove
you? You know, there are two books, a movie and a book, that have always inspired me. One is True Romance by Quentin Tarantino. I love love stories. You know, love stories to me are, they're universal. You know, they involve so many different aspects of life, happiness, pain. You know, True Romance was a crime story with a love story intertwined. And when I first saw that, I knew those were the kinds of things I wanted to write. The other movie, which is one of my favorites, is The Notebook by someone I know named Nick Cassavetes, which is just a beautiful love story. And I like to intertwine both of those. You know, to me, the gangster stories, the mob stories, they've all been told, you know, but when there's a love story attached to it, it just changes the dynamic of the story. And it just makes it very multifaceted, very interesting. And, you know, I like stories that really tug at your heartstrings. When I read something or I watch something, I want to feel. I want it to make me feel. I want to feel those emotions. And I think we did that in Strong Island. And I also think that, you know, these future books that we're writing, you know, there's another book we're working on after The Sergeant's Wife called The Legend of Jack and Diane. And it's in this similar, you know, facet of crime story and love story. And I just love the way those two are mixed.
So what's the next book, The Story of Jack and Diane, going to be about?
It's about two young people who have grown up from the time they were children. Diane is the strong female character. Jack was the male character, obviously. And they get involved in some things and go on a cross-country journey that involves murder, that involves loyalty, that involves them sticking together. You know, it's kind of a female version, in a way, of Thelma and Louise, the old movie. But, you know, I love some basic themes. I love loyalty. I love the idea of two people sticking together, you know, through anything, whatever life throws at you, circumstances or anything else, and getting through things together. I think that's the beautiful part of love stories.
And I think that's reflected a lot in Strong Island and in Sergeant's Wife. It's just, you can tell that you really value loyalty and love stories above everything else.
Well, loyalty is probably the most important thing to me. I mean, I've got a very small circle of friends, and, you know, sticking to each other, and especially through some of the things that I've gone through, it's very easy to judge somebody, and it's very easy to look at something. So many things are written, you know, and it's very easy to believe everything you see, but, you know, loyalty is, you know, really knowing somebody and believing them and sticking with them, and, you know, that's what I offer my friends, and that's what they offer me, and yeah, loyalty is definitely a theme throughout anything I ever write. It's very important to me.
Now, where would you say you got the inspiration for loyalty from? Would you say you got that from maybe boxing or just your time spent with your wife? Or
God, you know, that's a great question. You know, the very top of the book, a mob boss had once told me, he said, you know, loyalty is only tested on the worst day of your life. So if you never want to be disappointed, trust nobody. And I always thought that was a sad way to look at things, but unfortunately, I think it's very true. You know, I think people have a very hard time being loyal in difficult situations. You know, a lot of people love to say they're loyal, they've got you back, but, you know, when things go bad, you really figure out who's loyal. And, you know, life is short, you know, and those are the kind of people that you want to surround yourself with. So, you know, I think boxing in general, boxing taught me a lot of different things. It really taught me how to look at life, because, you know, when you're, and there are so many metaphors, but, you know, I had a very a famous boxing trainer named Tommy Gallagher back in the day, and he always used to tell me, you know, boxing's a lot like life. You just have to get to the next round. You know, you've got to get to the next round. You know, you've got to keep punching, and you've got to see, you know, what's going to happen. And when you get down on yourself and you get depressed, and, you know, like, for example, in The Sergeant's Wife, my friend, Ronald Consillo, his wife, committed suicide, and it was, you know, she wasn't able to push through that. And sometimes people find it hard, but, you know, if you don't get to the other side of things, you can never really truly experience happiness. You know, sometimes you got to get through the worst things in life to really find happiness. And, you know, if you give up, you're never going to see it. So, you know, I've learned some different lessons along the way. I do try to put them into the books. I think redemption is the story of my life, and it's something that I believe in, you know, wholeheartedly, and I really try to help people, you know, understand that and just be as positive as I can. I mean, it's difficult at times, obviously. I mean, you know, everyone goes through things, so it's really your perception on how you see things But yeah, you know, I mean, you learn a lot of life lessons as you go along the way.
For sure. Now, you did mention that you fought boxing, and we also know that you fought MMA. How did you get into combat sports in general?
Well, I mean, it really started from the book Strong Island. I mean, back in the day, you know, going out and getting into street fights was like, it was just like going out. I mean, you'd go to a club just to get into a fight. It was ridiculous. Looking back at it now, you know, there were actually some interesting memories. I can't believe how many fights we would get into. But even that was about, like, kind of proving your loyalty to the next guy. So, it's, you know, getting into boxing started by getting into a lot of street fights and someone saying, why don't you come to a boxing gym with me? And I went to a boxing gym, was good at it, you know, and pursued it. You know, in hindsight, you know, I love the sport a lot, but if it's not something you're willing to really, really dedicate your life to 1,000%, it's just impossible to be successful. And in the very beginning of my career, when I was undefeated, I was very successful and was really focused. And, you know, when I lost focus, the losses started to come and started to learn some more life lessons. And I always trained in MMA. I had trained with a lot of different MMA fighters, Frank Mir, Boss Ruin, Enrico Rodriguez in Vegas. And I always thought the toughest guy was really an MMA fighter. So, you know, when I was 42 years old, I decided to turn pro in mixed martial arts and had some fights there and did very well, didn't lose any MMA fights. And, you know, I just wanted to kind of prove it to myself. I didn't go out the right way in boxing. I went out kind of giving up on myself and quitting and taking fights for some paydays. But, you know, in MMA, I wanted to come back and prove to myself I could still do it. And that's what I did.
So you really started fighting because you wanted to prove, again, going back to loyalty. And I think that's such a good thing. And would you say fighting sort of reinforced the idea of proving yourself and being loyal to the guy beside you?
Well, it definitely did. I mean, I was definitely an angry young kid. So that was definitely a part of it. You know, I don't know where it came from. I'm definitely not the same person anymore. But when I was younger, you know, it was almost like your friends became your family. And you wanted to fight to prove that you had each other's back. And that's just the way it was, you know. Growing up in Long Island in the 80s, you know, all of my friends, and I could just, I mean, God, there was a bunch of us. Ronnie Miller, Chris Tarantino, Stephen Batul. I mean, there were so many guys that we would just go out and get into fights all the time. It was just what you did. It's funny because I've had kids now who have never been in a fight, which is great. And I think it's just a part of where you grow up. It almost seemed like a rite of passage back then.
Right. Now, would you say that your life is a bit of an inspiration for your kids, who, because you've been through a lot through life, and now that you're writing a book and you've become a published author, would you say you want your kids to look up to you and say, my dad is a phenomenal guy and he is an author and things, or would you want them to sort of say, okay, here's what I can do and what I can't do?
Well, I mean, I think the one great lesson is, my kids know me very well. I mean, I kind of wear my heart on my sleeve. I'm not afraid to cry. I'm very emotional. I'm very sensitive. I think the one thing my kids will learn by you know, knowing me is perseverance is the key. I think perseverance is the key to life, you know. I mean, just not giving up and keep coming back and continually fighting for what you want is really the key. I mean, I hope they do things differently than I did. You know, if I could go back and do things differently, I quite honestly would have done a lot of things differently. But, you know, you get to the point you're at and, you know, you can only look forward. You know, I mean, I did spend too much time personally looking back on things and regretting things. And, you know, when you do that, you definitely lose living in the moment. You know, I mean, a good friend of mine said to me once, he's like, you know what the key to happiness is? And I said, you know what? He said, well, we're always either looking into the past or looking into the future, and we're never living in the moment. And the days do get by you. They seem to go past when you're not appreciating the things you're doing. So I'm trying now at the advanced age I'm at of appreciating my time and being positive and you know, and moving forward. So, I mean, I hope my kids find inspiration in that. You know, they're great kids. I mean, they're all, you know, better than I was. So hopefully I did something right.
For sure. Now we're just going to go on a quick break here, play some nice music for the folks, and we'll come back with more about your book. I'm really looking forward to it, and some more about just fighting in general.
Excellent.
That was I Think I'm Falling in Love by the Devons. I'm here with a great guy, Mr. Bruce. Sorry, I keep forgetting how to pronounce your last name. Bellacci, all right, author and former pro boxer, and we were just talking about your book. So where are, you mentioned a whole bunch of people in your book, you know, the guys who obviously do the heist together, then unfortunately get involved with the triple murder. So where are these guys now?
Well, one of them is one of them has three life sentences and is in prison. And, you know, some of the others are, you know, some of the others escaped and did the right thing and went on to become very successful people. And, you know, that's, I mean, I guess, you know, most of them found their way, you know, and it's sad because when you look back, you know, and I've thought about this so many times, I wish I could go back. I mean, we don't have time machines, but it would have been nice to go back and, you know, get people to really think about the choices they make. You know, it's something that I learned way too late myself, but you know, the choices you make, the people you hang around with, it dictates where your life is going to go. And, you know, hopefully they're all doing well. I mean, I'm in contact with some of them. Some of them I'm not, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
You know, some are dead, some are in prison. But yeah, that's pretty much the story.
So how did you get connected with these guys in the first place?
Well, people I grew up with. I mean, people I've known since kindergarten, since elementary school, since high school.
So would you say you grew up in a bit of a rougher neighborhood, or was it just, you know, typical?
Absolutely not. I grew up in a really well-to-do, upper-middle-class neighborhood on the South Shore of Long Island, Merrick, Long Island. It was a beautiful place. You know, it was just a couple of kids who didn't fit in and really didn't belong in that neighborhood that had to kind of overcompensate and get what they wanted to fit in. And the kids that we were friends with who had everything were trying to fit in with us. And it was just a microcosm for life. Everybody was trying to be something they weren't.
So what advice would you give to someone who's maybe in that place right now, maybe they don't fit in and maybe they're considering, you know, going down the wrong path of maybe taking up, you know, petty robbery or whatever, just to sort of say, hey, I'm cool, I can fit in, I do X, Y, and Z. What advice would you give to that person?
Oh, God. Well, number one, think about your future. Because the choices you make when you're young are going to dictate what happens in the future. And, you know, there's nothing short-term worth doing that is going to ruin your future. I mean, you've really got to think about that. It's, you know, living for the moment, being in the moment is great. You've got to appreciate the time that you live in, but you've really got to be concerned about the choices you make. I mean, you know, life is all about choices. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, you know, if you could go back and
still with me?
Taken me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, if you could go back and think about choices and the forks in the road and change them, you know, it's really important, I think, to have that awareness when you're in that moment, you know, and to make the right choices. Man, life's all about choices. It's that simple.
All right. And now, I hate to diverge this because it's an amazing topic, but you have a, you did combat sports for a bit, and you have a another fight coming up, actually. It's a bare-knuckle fight. How did you get involved with that?
Well, I'm trying to, yes.
Yeah, so how did you get involved with that?
I was watching, I always wanted to fight again.
Right.
You know, I just turned 50, and I was actually pitching a show with my friend Rob called Fighting at 50. And, you know, really, it's just, to me, it's all about the same thing. It's all about proving that you can do things. It's all about challenges in life. I watched a bare-knuckle pay-per-view event that someone named Boss Root, a very famous fighter, had put on. I saw him commentating, and I called up a friend of mine named Darren Harvey, who I've known for like 25 years, who's super tight with Boss, and I asked him if he could put me on the event, and he said he would. He said, just make sure you're training, and something I just started again, and you know, just something I really, really want to do. I miss competing. I think competing at this age is, you know, fantastic if you can still do it. And you know, at 42, they told me I couldn't do it. I remember getting a phone call the night before the fight from a promoter saying, listen, the guy you're fighting is 290 pounds. He's 23 years old. He's a beast. You know, I really don't think you should do this. And I said, okay, you know, I'll take that into consideration. I knocked him out in the first round and continue to do that in my MMA fights. And I feel no different at 50. I think I can still do it. So it's just about, you know, it's just about proving to myself that I can, really.
Right. So you fought boxing, you fought MMA, and now you're gonna fight bare knuckle. I know you and I both know Joe Rogan. I don't know him personally, but I've listened to his podcast a lot, and he really preaches about bare knuckle fighting is probably safer for fighters than wearing gloves. What's your take on that?
Well, actually, it's very true. Quite honestly, professional boxing was way harder than professional MMA. And the reason is, I mean, I was in sparring sessions with guys like Shannon Briggs, Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield. You know, when you're going 10 rounds with there's gloves, there's padding, and people think it's safer, but you're taking constant thuds to the head, constant. You know, usually not enough to put you out, but it's that constant repetition. You know, I would come out of training sessions sometimes, and my trainer would say, hold on a second, give yourself a minute because you're slurring your words. And you'd have concussions every day. You know, with bare knuckle, I mean, you know, you take one shot and you get knocked out, let's say. It's one shot to the head, and supposedly it is safer than the repetitive concussions that you would receive through boxing. And in MMA is a very difficult sport, obviously, but you're really never going, you know, you tap out in training if you're about to get submitted or break something. You know, you're going 100%, but you've got shin pads on when you're kicking. It's just a little bit different. To me, I thought professional boxing, you know, you've got guys that have two weapons, their hands, that are perfected. It's just, I think it's a harder sport to compete in and be great at, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, I have the most respect for MMA fighters, which is why I competed in it. I do think the toughest guys are MMA fighters because it's everything. You've got to be great at everything.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And it's my favorite sport to watch. I mean, I love MMA. I can't miss a fight.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think bare knuckle actually is safer.
Now, would you ever consider writing a book about fighting in general, or would you more stick towards romance and crime and things like that?
You know, that's interesting. I have a book. I have so many that are kind of in the works. I have a book called Courage, about a fighter. It's a Rocky-ish type of story in the Midwest. I do like to stick. I think it's important when you're a writer or an author to find out who your audience is and who you're writing for. And I think if you spread things out too much, I mean, it's why guys like James Patterson write under other names when they write other genres of books.
Right.
You know, your audience expects something from you. So I know the things that I'm most passionate about are I love crime novels, I love true crime, and I love love stories. So I like, that's really my niche. That's my genre. There's a love story in everything I write.
Right.
So I don't think I would ever write a book just about fighting, you know. But I do find it fascinating. I would definitely read the book.
For sure. And now, what really drew you to love stories? I mean, you don't personally, just from what I've heard, and from, you're not the type of guy that I would instantly assume that guy's into love stories. What sort of drew you?
That's funny. I get that a lot. I definitely get that a lot. Well, I'm probably the exact opposite of the way I look and the way I appear. You know, I'm really sensitive, really emotional. I think there's nothing more beautiful than a great love story. What draws me to them? I'm not positive. I think that, you know, I mean, what's the one basic factor that people, you know, really need to survive? I think love is just the number one thing. You know, I admire people that don't need it. People that can live single and are cool by themselves their whole life and don't need to love another person and don't need to feel loved. I think that's fascinating to me. I mean, that's a whole interesting dynamic. For me, you know, sharing something with someone else and two souls connecting, I just think it's a beautiful thing. And, you know, life is tough. So people going through struggles together and staying with each other, I mean, you know, I think loyalty fits in there. I mean, I don't know. I just love love stories. I mean, I watch The Notebook. I cry every time. I could cry right now if I want.
And what do you think really makes a love story? What is the prime thing that a love story needs for you?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any love story ever written in the history of the world, fiction or nonfiction, that didn't involve struggles and ups and downs. And I think that's what's beautiful about it. I think the beautiful thing is, you know, what someone goes through and where they end up, you know? I mean, you know, when you hear stories about people that have gone through such struggles and they stick together, I mean, to me, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, quite honestly, you know, what really inspired me, I think, growing up was my grandmother and grandfather. You know, they didn't know each other a long time. He was from the wrong side of the tracks.
Right.
She was from a very well-to-do family. She was disowned by her family for the most part. They didn't want them to be together. They stayed married for 50-something years. My grandfather passed away. He loved her to death till the day he died. And my grandmother was 95 years old and died last year because she was totally healthy. She stopped eating because she just wanted to be with her husband. She just wanted to be with him. And I always thought that was beautiful. And growing up and seeing how he loved her was something that just always inspired me. I just always thought it was the way things were supposed to be.
And would you say that's inspired your own sort of view on love? Like, you know, how you treat your relationships in general?
Well, I mean, I think so. I mean, I would say so. I mean, I that's how, you know, that's how I feel about it. I mean, I always want the person I'm with to feel like they're just, you know, that they're loved. I want them to know it. I think it's an important thing to know that you're loved on a daily basis. But, you know, we're also victims to our own past and our own circumstances, and everyone's got their own baggage, you know, and conquering those things and having two people come together and be on the same page and understand each other. I mean, there's so much to it, you know. I mean, and look, by the way, I love the complication of love stories.
Yeah.
So it's just something fascinating for me to write about. You know, Romeo and Juliet, probably one of my favorite books, plays, films of all time.
Yeah.
And I mean, what's more poetic than someone willing to die for another human being?
Yeah. You know?
So
I don't know if you've ever heard the Bible verse, you shall know no greater love than this than to lay down your life for your friends. I think that really speaks to a lot of the love stories nowadays.
Without a doubt. I mean, it's a beautiful verse. I have heard of it. And it's, you know, and the other thing is, how many people can find that?
Exactly.
You know, how many people have that? You know, it's something that I aspire for my entire life, quite honestly. I mean, it's something I'm still chasing. I mean, it's a big part of my life, and you know, it definitely inspires my writing. You know, I mean, it's something, you know, when you're writing, I mean, writing is a very lonely experience in general.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're spending 8-10 hours a day by yourself, just, you know, putting words on paper. So it's nice to be stuck in certain thoughts that you're inspired by when you're alone that much.
For sure. Now I'm a young man. I'm single, and I don't have the best track record relationship wise. What advice would you give to someone like me who maybe needs a little advice on love?
Jesus Christ, that's a great one. I'm not sure I'm qualified to give that advice, but I will. I think the most important thing in any relationship you're going to enter into is understanding. And it's really hard to do. You know, I mean, we've all got personal needs. We've all got things that we want ourselves to feel good. But it's important that, you know, you understand what the other person needs also. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. But I think understanding is the most important thing. I mean, loyalty, of course, again, my number one thing. And I think loyalty on all levels. I mean, and look, that's been a struggle for me. I have a problem when someone is committed to me but not speaking highly of me. I feel like that's unloyal.
Yeah.
So, you know, unloyal just isn't about cheating and having affairs. Unloyal is just, loyalty is, you know, there's so many levels of it. And that's always been important to me. But I think advice is just really understanding. You know, I mean, that's, you know, you've got to be empathetic to other people. You've got to be compassionate. But you've got to really be understanding when you're going into a relationship. So hopefully you can get it right one day, my friend.
Hopefully. So I think your books actually really tie into that. Sort of, they're making it apathetic to, you know, people who maybe go through a struggle, especially in Strong Island. Sort of, there's a struggle, and would you say that's sort of what you were aiming for, or just telling the love story? And
well, no, I mean, I think the antagonist in the book is life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think really, and I think that's most people's struggle. I think it's very interesting because, I mean, life throws so many different things at you, and it's about navigating your way through the landmines and trying to come out okay, and trying to come out happy. You know, I mean, I think that's the hardest part. I think people struggle with it. I think the book for me was very therapeutic to write it, number one, because I was going through a very difficult time, and I needed to throw my mind somewhere else. And, you know, I lived in that story. And I went back to a really good place for me with a lot of good memories, even though obviously there's a lot of, you know, bad involved with it also. But it goes back to the way you're raised and where you come from and what your roots are and you know, what you do to get out. And some of us made it out and some of us didn't make it out. You know, and really the book is all about the choices you make in life. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And you know, I think the book is a metaphor for life. I think people are really going to enjoy it. I mean, I've seen some of the reviews. I'm looking forward to hearing more from people about, you know, I don't think it's a book just for people who grew up on Long Island. I think it's a universal message in the book. And hopefully people love it.
So what's the main message that you want people to take away from the book? Is it face life head on no matter what throws at you? Is it loyalty is key? What's the main message you want people to take away from it?
It's a great question. I think the main message in the book is that, you know, people have to stay true to themselves, number one, and you're always going to be faced with decisions. I mean, the book is really about my personal struggle, you know, being loyal to my friends, being in love with somebody, you know, trying to figure out what the right thing to do in life. I mean, the main message in the book is really about love and loyalty and being true to yourself. I think being true to yourself is probably the most important thing, and it's hard to do. I know personally for me, I'm constantly, and I think it's the reason why I got in trouble, honestly, is I'm constantly trying to be, sometimes loyalty is bad if you're loyal to a fault. You know, I mean, if your loyalty is going to cause you personal destruction, you've got to figure out if that person deserves your loyalty or not. And I think that's the trickiest thing in life. I think I've personally been loyal, and I'm not speaking of my friends. I think I've personally been loyal to the wrong people in certain situations. And that's a lesson I'm still trying to learn.
So how do you think someone should determine who they should be loyal to? Like, would you say it's, oh, this person's morals align with mine, so I'll be loyal to them? Or do you think it, how do you determine who you be loyal to?
I think it's a give and take. If someone is constantly taking from you, and I'm kind of speaking in relationship terms.
Right.
Friendship-wise also. But if you find yourself always being the one that does everything, that is giving everything, and you don't feel like you're getting it back, maybe that person doesn't deserve your loyalty.
Right.
You know, I mean, you've gotta be able to get something back. I mean, you know, everyone's got their own needs. So, you know, I mean, I think you can't be loyal. If you're loyal blindly, I think you'll find yourself in trouble, which I know I definitely can.
Blind loyalty is definitely not a good idea.
Yeah, and it's funny because loyalty was something ingrained in me.
I'm sorry, folks. We have a bit of a technical issue here. We've lost him here for a second. I think he's calling me back. Oh, good. Sorry, we lost you for a second there.
Sorry about that. I'm back. I think, you know, loyalty, no matter what, you know, I mean, it was ingrained in me, so I thought I had to be loyal no matter what the situation. But, you know, sometimes people just don't deserve it. You've got to pick and choose who you give it to. It's very important.
Of course. So we're going to wrap it up in a few minutes. So is there any other advice you want to give out, any other things about the book you want people to know?
I just hope people buy the book. I hope they read it. I hope they take something away from it. I hope the people that live through it, my friends who have bought the book, appreciate it and enjoy the story. And, you know, I just think it's a great read. I hope everybody else picks up a copy of it. It's available on Amazon and Kindle right now. You can also order the paperback version. It'll be in stores in a couple of months. I just hope people enjoy it, you know, and receive their own message from it.
Yeah. Now, before we go, I love talking about tattoos. I have 7 myself. I noticed that you do have a few tattoos.
Yeah.
So which one do you think has the most meaning to you?
You know what? I really can't even talk about that. There are some that are very personal to me. But, you know, if I could do it all over again, I'd start all over from scratch.
So just tell us about a few of the tattoos you have then.
Well, I've got Strong Island tattooed on my forearm. That's kind of an important tattoo to me.
I'd imagine so.
Yeah, that's a big one. You know, I've got the word forgive tattooed in the palm of my hand, which I look at and I try to remember all the time. It's really important to forgive things.
Yes.
And probably the most important tattoo is the one right in the middle of my neck across my throat that says believe. You know, and at the time when I was very down, you know, I wanted to remember that I had to believe in things and I wanted to wake up and look in the mirror and see it every day. So that's probably the most important one I have.
And would you say that believing in yourself really got you to write this book, or would you say it was just the help of others and the belief in yourself?
Well, it's definitely a combination of everything. I mean, it's, you know, anything you do in life, you know, you need the support of others. It's very difficult to do things just on your own. I mean, even the book. I mean, the book is really, it's dedicated to the people and the friends I grew up with who I went through these things with. Without them, there was no story. You know, without Sarah helping me, I don't think the book would have been written. You know, there are a lot of things. I mean, you need the support of other people. So, but yeah, I mean, I definitely had to believe in myself to do it. So that was definitely an important lesson.
So thank you very much for your time, sir. I hope to speak with you again soon. And hopefully we can hear more about your book. Again, you can buy it on Amazon, you said, Kindle, everything like that. Well, thank you very much.
Pound Strong Island. Just search for it. Pound Strong Island. You can pick it up.
Too. Pound Strong Island. All right. Well,
thanks again, man.
Thank you very much, sir. Take care. So that was an amazing show. I hope you all enjoyed it. Please do go buy the book. It's an amazing book. I've read a bit of it so far, and I'm still really getting into it. I love it so much. That's Poundstrawing Island. And Bruce's next book, The Sergeant's Wife, will be coming out very soon. I don't know when exactly. He didn't give me a date, but it will be coming out very soon. Unfortunately, no one was able to pick up on the... no one has tweeted at me about the three hints I have given on the Radio Laurier Instagram. I have taken over the Radio Laurier Instagram today, and I was playing a little game with you guys. Name the three clues. Name the three things that I've named about myself to get to know your DJ. So far, no one has tweeted at me about it, so unfortunately, no one will be getting a shout-out this week. However, if you remember the three things, please do tweet at me, and you will get a shout out on the next show. Feel free to tweet at me anytime at DJ Hacksaw or at the Bravo Sierra Hour. I also have my own Instagram page, the Bravo Sierra Hour and the Real DJ Hacksaw. And you can follow my guest today, Bruce, at the Real Bruce 13 on Instagram. He has a very, very entertaining Instagram full of fun stuff about his book, and just about what he's doing. You can keep up to date with him. Right now, he's in Florida, living there. So if you are listening, you want to head down to Florida, Bruce is a great guy. And he's actually maybe going on to one of my favorite podcasts, hopefully Joe Rogan. But again, we wish him the best, and we hope that Bruce gets all the sales. Please go buy his book. This has been the Bravo Sierra Hour. We're cutting it a bit short today, but it's been a great episode. And best of luck to Bruce. This song goes out to you. You Can't Stop Me by Andy Mineo.